Could you describe him for me?
A white man, dark hair.
He had these dark colored eyes.
The voice you're about to hear is the man we believe to be the so-called Yorkshire Ripper.
At 7:41 this morning, the body of a 28-year-old woman was found in the Prince Philip playing fields to find out who they are and why this happened.
They don't know who Ripper is. They don't know what Ripper looks like.
So please, help us find the person who killed my daughter.
This is only going to get bigger.
I give you my word that I will catch this animal.
People's lives will carry on being destroyed.
Until they catch this man.
No. Long after that.
Tonight's topic is, it's another sexual pervert special, isn't it, Dave?
Lovely.
We've done Russell Brand, we've done Hugh Edwards.
Can I just say, do you know what it is yet?
We've done Operation Yew Tree. And now we're going to be talking about Sutcliffe and Saville, the perverted axis of evil.
Indeed.
But we want to be careful not to go over old ground, because we have done a Yorkshire Ripper three-parter, and we've also done plenty on Saville in the past. But specifically, what we wanted to talk about was the two dramas.
Indeed.
Coincidentally, were broadcast around at the same time, weren't they?
They were indeed.
Yeah. So not so long ago. So we're talking about The Long Shadow, which is the ITV seven-parter about Peter Sutcliffe and the Yorkshire Ripper murders. And also The Reckoning, the four-parter, starring Steve Coogan, about Jimmy Savile. Which one do you want to do first?
Should we do The Long Shadow first?
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah, I've only just finished watching that, actually. I had to catch up on a few episodes.
But I personally thought that was the superior drama series, to be honest.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you.
I'm glad you do, pal. And for me, what I loved about it, and I thought it was very good on the whole, was it did really approach it from the victim's point of view. And it also showed some of the real ignorance of the police in there. I thought it managed those things very well, actually. And it showed the precarious and dangerous nature of things at that time. I thought it was very well done.
It's interesting that they did a seven-parter, because you never really see seven-parter. You see a six-parter, but not seven. But I think they did want to tell the story properly, and it didn't feel like it was too long to me. I found it pretty compelling throughout. You know, I wasn't bored at any point.
I thought it was tasteful.
I
thought it was tasteful and respectful. And I thought what it really did highlight, which was, I think, was an important thing, that very few of these kind of serial killer type dramas show, is the long term impact on families. The devastation, not just on the victims themselves, but the ripple effect that sweeps across entire families that they will never lose.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it sort of ended with a clip of Richard McCann, who was Wilma McCann, the first victim, her son. And he was about 9 or 10 when she was killed. And since, you know, it's had a devastating effect on his life and of his sister, who did commit suicide.
She killed herself, exactly.
But he's become like a motivational speaker.
He's a fantastic human being, I think.
Yeah.
He's an amazing guy. He's a brilliant speaker. And I think the way he's fought through it, but it's still central to his life. You know, it's such a devastating thing. And it had a devastating effect on some of the police officers too, which is shown. I thought the Toby Jones depiction of the police officer who basically made himself truly ill.
As they
saw the decline in George Oldfield as well, irrespective of their huge mistakes.
When I heard David Morrissey was going to play Oldfield, I thought, is he right for that? Because he's a tall bloke. He's not fat, is he? He's not. He might be as old. He probably is as old as George Oldfield was at the time.
Yeah.
But I thought he was brilliant. He was really good.
Totally agree.
Yeah. He did a very good fat resting face, didn't he?
He did. I totally agree with you, because it's like, he's physically bigger than George Oldfield, don't look like him, but he kind of metamorphosed into him. I thought he really had a look of him in the end. You know, it was really good. Yeah, I think Morrissey's performance was in particular excellent.
Well, I thought he'd copped out of getting his hair shaved off, right? Because in my head, I had an idea that Oldfield was bald. But now, when you actually see Oldfield, he wasn't, but he did have a bit of a comb-over going on.
It's like a comb-over, yeah. It's like.
But Morrissey thought, nah, I'm not shaving my head for that. No, I'll just have hair.
It was one of those 70s haircuts, which was like properly gelled down or Cossack hairspray, literally to your skull. So it's set tight on your skull. Your hair. But the costumes, the look of it, the cars, the environment, the feel of it, I thought it was very well done.
Yeah.
And the dismissal that almost everybody was a prostitute, when that was kind of so vague, and the frustration you felt watching it as well, when you could see how many people, especially highlighted towards the end of the series, how many people had recognised this person in their appearance. And the crazy thing, you know, something we don't often talk about is that Sutcliffe never changed his fucking appearance.
No.
He never clipped his beard off or had changed his hairdo. So all these photo fits were of this same looking fella, you know.
My disappointment, I have to say, because I've read the Michael Bilton book a couple of times, which it's based on, which is an absolutely brilliant book called Wicked Beyond Belief. Yeah. And he very much focuses on the women. And he did say that he wasn't interested in Sutcliffe. Sutcliffe was just, you know, a mad pervert, and he didn't want to get into him. But I felt when I read the book that he was cheating his readers a bit. Mm. And I also felt this drama cheated the viewers, because Peter Sutcliffe is a fascinating man. He's not, the fact that he's ordinary is part of the fascination. But he did also have some weird interests, you know. He worked in a graveyard, he was obsessed with this waxwork museum. You know, his family are very interesting, and you do sort of want to know what led to him doing what he did. Sure. And his relationship with Sonia is very interesting as well.
Indeed, one of the most interesting scenes in the whole thing, I thought, was when the police went to visit Sonia,
and she just watches the telly. That did happen,
very odd. Very odd. And you've still got all the plastic covers on all the seats and everything. And she's just sat there and she's defending him. She's giving him an alibi all the time to the police officers, which I still to this day, I can't really understand why she wasn't brought to book on that, because she was offering him an alibi.
I think it was not necessarily Peter was lying for him. I think when they said to her, you know, we're going to go through some dates, can you tell us where he was?
Yeah.
And she just says, oh, well, he would have been at work or here. Because I think we discussed this previously on the podcast.
Yeah, we probably have.
We don't think she was covering up for him. And she did have her own mental health problems, didn't she?
I think she was
diagnosed with schizophrenia.
She was diagnosed with schizophrenia, wasn't she? It just felt in the drama that it was an element of covering his back a bit. The way they presented it was like, he would have been here. He was here. He'd have been here. So it was kind of like that. Now, very matter of fact, do you know what? Maybe they felt that she was at times covering his back a bit, but they didn't have felt like they had enough honour to actually accuse her of any misdemeanour.
I thought that scene, though, was good, and it was important to put in, because when they did go round and tell her that he was the Ripper, her response was like really indifferent, you know.
She was watching
an Open University program, and as we saw, the copper turns it off because she's not really paying attention to what they're saying, and then she goes and puts it back on. It was like she was sort of putting her fingers in her ears, and she couldn't handle it.
Yeah, that's it. It was really, I mean, because that copper, I mean, I don't know if that's actually what happened, but it was that. The guy who goes to visit her with the other copper, he's the guy who really wanted to bring Sutcliffe to book, didn't he?
Was that Andrew Laptu?
Correct. Mm. And whether that actually happened in real life, but that's
how I don't know if he went. I don't know.
Yeah, but he does in the drama. So they've, yeah. I think they've taken some dramatic liberties, you know, there for the sake of the drama, because he's there and he goes back and says, this guy, look, and we've got a photo fit. This is how he looks, blah, 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 da, da, da. And then, of course, at the end, he comes forward and said, I tried to tell you about him. So they do have that scene where he comes forward and he said, you know, I had him. You wouldn't listen to me. You put
it. Yeah, it was good. It was good that because it was Dick Holland. I thought he was played really well by Stephen Waddington because he was like Oldfield's enforcer, wasn't he? He was a bit of an hard guy, or
he was a knob.
Bullied people.
Correct. And he was a knob. You know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
He was a complete knob. Yeah.
He really presented him as a knob because he was so dismissive, especially when they were so focused on the tape recordings. It was so frustrating, and of course, you and I, because we know the story so well. You know, it was still frustrating. So I thought that the drama was doing a good job. I thought the production did a good job, because when you know the story and you know the basic facts, because the way they went in a particular direction,
yeah,
and they weren't listening to other, they weren't listening to the to some of the victims who were saying no, he had a Yorkshire accent, and other police officers were saying no. What about these photo fits? What about this guy? What about that guy? We think he's someone from the local area. They weren't listening because they were so focused on this, what turned out to be a fraudulent tape. And that is frustrating. And you did get that deep sense of frustration watching it. And I thought that was, you know, that was really good, really compelling drama as a consequence. But the thought the acting all round actually was excellent.
Yeah, it's interesting that the guy who played Ronald Gregory.
Yeah.
Because Gregory was like, he was a bit of a joke.
He was.
Character, wasn't he? He was a bit, you know, when you were doing him in the last podcast.
But he does get the Gregory voice very well. Yeah. He does have the
He does, but he seemed to, he was played with a lot more, well, he seemed a lot more competent.
And gravitas.
And he had more gravitas.
Yeah.
Whereas he was a bit of a dick.
Yeah,
by all accounts, wasn't he?
Well, it was
like
kind
many
of
them.
Yeah. Well, what was kind of interesting though in the series, they kind of made him almost like slightly malevolent, certainly an operator, conniving operator, and I think that was quite interesting. Whereas we, like you said, when we were doing our podcast on the Ripper, we always just saw him as a sort of Freemasonry knobhead, somebody who probably wore like red bloody corduroy pants in the evening, you know, and white white slip-ons, and went down the golf club with his Tory mates, you know. And he probably did all those things, whether this series or not.
Good news, George, just give me good news. No
I only want good news,
not
George.
not listening.
I think we must follow this idea of the tape. And we're going to put out advertisements, we're going to put out adverts and all, some of the ideas, Jesus Christ. But what's interesting, you know, you were saying about not following the Ripper's story. And what's interesting is, and then we're going to go on to talk about The Reckoning, but The Reckoning was a character study. The drama basically was a character study, whereas The Long Shadow wasn't a character study. This is the thing. It's all about the effect that the Ripper has on the environment around him, the society around him, and of course the victims and the family's victims and the police officers. And the thing that was, I thought, one of the most effective things about the series was that kind of clicking sound when you knew that the Ripper was about. Do you know, do you remember that in the music? I thought that was quite sinister. It's really that really good little device, that, because you knew that, oh, he's here and this could be, this is trouble now, he's going to take one of these girls. And so you never saw any of the violence. You only saw like a body with, you know, or the leg out.
Do you think though that, I know they wanted to do it in a certain way because they didn't want to open themselves up to accusations, but I think that did probably make them cower a bit because it didn't have much suspense for me.
Possibly not. No.
You know, no. And
in a way,
it was well done. It was a sort of a worthy piece.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering whether they were scared of criticism and that maybe stopped it being more dramatic than it was.
Quite possibly, yeah.
I mean, I know with serial killers, there's a line that can be crossed where it, interest and wanting to know what motivated them turned into glorification. But like I say, that Sutcliffe's backstory is very interesting. It is very interesting. And there was certain aspects of the investigation that weren't covered that prominently, like the £5 note inquiry.
I totally agree with that. That wasn't covered. Yes.
Because that's really interesting about how this £5 note was left in the purse of Jean Jordan. And they realised, oh, it's a new £5 note, we can trace this. And they did eventually trace it back to the place Sutcliffe worked. And they knew it was given to one of the employers of Clark's, I think.
Yeah.
The name of the company. Because the lines of inquiry, they were few and far between, but that was one of the main ones. The other one was the tyre tracks.
Which, of course, Lee Ingleby's character was...
Yeah, you see, about it. I'm not sure. You see, the funny thing is he plays Jim Hobson, right?
Yes.
Now, what stuck out for me, and this is probably just because of the period it's set in, is that the actors across the board seemed a lot younger than the characters.
I agree.
Yeah. Whereas you think, oh, he's a bit young to be playing him.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, they probably were around the same age. It's just that in the 70s, everybody looked about 50 years old.
I bet you David Morrissey isn't that far different from the age of George Oldfield.
No.
And Lee Ingleby probably was a very similar age to Jim Hobson.
I mean, I've seen Jim Hobson speak, and he didn't seem right for that role, to be honest.
No, possibly not. And I like Lee Ingleby as an actor. I think he's a great actor.
He's all right.
I agree with you. It didn't kind of... I feel, possibly, dare I say it, that our old mate, Rhys Dinsdale, might have played him brilliantly.
Yeah, he could do with a good role, couldn't he?
Yeah, I love it. I'd love to see him in a big part. I love Dinsdale. Dinsdale! Yeah, but what was interesting there is they felt like there was a lot of conflict between him and Oldfield, because Oldfield kept telling him off about the tyre tracks and stuff. And I always thought they were quite close. They worked quite closely together.
No, I think the thing is, Oldfield wasn't really welcome, because another aspect which did hinder the investigation is that at the time of the murders, the West Yorkshire Police was forming. So they were joining up the forces like Leeds, Bradford, Wakefield. Yeah. And what they did to try and integrate people is they took coppers, like the Oldfield was like a heartbeat copper. You know, he was in Wakefield, so he didn't investigate anything more than like a stolen bike. he was put in charge of like the Leeds murder squad or something like that.
Yeah.
And he wasn't welcome, you know, he wasn't respected. No. And that did cause a lot of tension. You know, seasoned murder coppers didn't like being told what to do by him and Dick Holland.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dennis Hoban was the first copper, played by Toby Jones. And
indeed,
he was very well respected, because I don't and think he'd ever had a case that he didn't solve.
No, Hoban. And that comes across very strongly in the in the drama. The first episode, certainly the first episode and a half. And the idea that Gregory usurps him and brings in Oldfield. And you can see that it deflated a lot of the people, the other officers around. So I think all that internal police stuff was quite interesting, whether they got it right or not, to the reality.
Yeah, but there was rivalry, Dave, because I'm sure there was, because... It does get a bit confusing, because you think, well, where's Hoban? Why is the two coppers doing this? But it's because one was Bradford, one was Leeds.
Mm.
But yeah, it did. I mean, one criticism I would lever at it, Dave, is that it seemed desperate to portray every female character as like a paragon of virtue.
Yeah.
And to portray all the men as sexist, misogynistic, or stupid.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh God, it's the same old, same old.
I think the one thing that they were trying to do, and I thought, and actually, I kind of thought when they were portraying it through the police officers, their sort of belligerence about them being prostitutes, about being slags or whatever, you know, these.
Well, they referred to innocent women, meaning non-prostitutes, didn't they? But
yeah,
got to remember that when it was the 70s.
Sure.
You know, things were black and white.
Sure.
Then.
you know, obviously there's a woke-ish element about it, and it's not as gritty. If I've got a criticism about it, I agree it wasn't gritty enough. Mm. These things never feel
well,
gritty.
Can you think of one positive male character? Maybe, maybe
Toby Jones.
Yeah, Toby Jones, okay, fair enough. And the lab chew guy. But even the husbands of the parents of the victims, the woman was always the real strong one.
Sure.
Where the man was just seen as...
They showed a male victim, the guy who was accused of being the Yorkshire Ripper, who wasn't.
Yeah, but I don't think he really looked like Sutcliffe. Because they made a point of making him look like Sutcliffe.
And that's, again, that's artistic license there, I think. You know, I think they've stretched that. I was really hoping they might have had a scene where Bruce Jones was in it, you know, finding the body and all that. That would have been really good, but they didn't do that.
Special guest.
That would have been great. Not obviously not him playing himself, but you know, a younger version of himself played by an actor.
What but did anyway, you think of the guy who played Ripper?
I thought it was reasonable, pretty good.
Yeah, he actually played, I think his name's Mark Stobbart.
Yeah.
From what I know him from is he played Ozzy's son in Alfieras and Pet.
Right.
Series 3.
Ah.
Yeah. I thought he looked really good. You know, they did a bit of makeup on him and I thought he played him pretty well, you know, from the limited
bits
he had. But you know what they should have done?
Go on.
I mean, I know they didn't want to glorify him. But one of the most dramatic parts of the story is when he confesses.
Yes.
And they weren't expecting it. You know, they thought, oh, this is going to be tough. And even though they had an inkling that he could be the Ripper, he sort of just comes out with it because he's like getting questioned and he's going, oh, well, I think I know what this is leading up to. And he went, what do you mean? And he said, well, it's me, isn't it? I'm the Yorkshire Ripper. That would have been a great scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just did it then, Lee. And my other criticism with him was his voice wasn't high enough.
No. Oh, no, it was me. I did it. You're looking for the Yorkshire Ripper. It was me.
I think the thing is, the difference is, the thing is with like Savile doing the, well, to be fair, the BBC were incredibly, in a way, incredibly brave or incredibly stupid on actually doing a character study on Savile and going as far as they did with it, actually.
Yeah, so we'll get onto that now if you want.
What did
you think of it?
But in a way, if they did a study, just quickly to say, if they did a study of Sutcliffe to the kind of standard that, say, Brian Dennehy did of John Wayne Gacy in the film To Catch a Killer, which was a brilliant performance by Brian Dennehy, and looked into his as a character study, that would in its own right be fascinating. But I think they tread very carefully today, don't they? So they did a drama that was really all about the victims.
I think, you know, I've read probably a better book, I would say. I mean, Wicked Beyond Belief by Michael Bilton is a brilliant book.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think a better book on the case is Gordon Burns's Somebody's Husband, Somebody's Son, which has been compared to In Cold Blood.
Yeah.
And I don't mean Gordon Burns.
I know. Third Degree Burns.
Gordon Burns from Krypton Factor. It's Gordon Byrne.
Gordon Byrne.
That is a brilliant book. And that does delve into Sutcliffe's life, you know, and it's got a lot of interviews from people that knew him and his family.
And we've talked about Sammy. All
fascinating,
this background.
Fascinating book it is. He's certainly not glorifying him.
I think that's it. I mean, even like Jackie said when we were watching A Long Shadow, that, oh, you know, he was really triggered by the fact that his mum had an affair, and it really, so showing something like that would have been kind of
that's
interesting.
That's right, yeah.
And then obviously that whole business of him, which is all in Gordon Byrne's book, of course, is the fascination with the body parts, and he kept going back and back to that museum, didn't he, to see them.
Yeah.
So all that kind of understanding of his background and this kind of disassociation with people, with empathy, which is obviously there. That's obviously a big part.
And his early association with prostitutes, you know, he got humiliated.
Correct.
By a couple. And I think that's what triggered him killing Wilma McCann, his first victim, because she was she was mocking him for not being able to get an erection, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, the reckoning, Dave, what do you reckon?
Well, okay. I'm going to put the controversial bit out there straight away. Okay, that's okay. In the reviews, it was all like, oh, why have they bothered to do this? But Steve Coogan's performance is amazing.
Mm.
I personally thought that although, yes, Coogan's performance is brilliant when he's showing this dark side of Saville, okay? Mm. But he doesn't show the charm. There's no charm. And we kept saying, I kept saying this to Jack, we kept saying this. I said, the thing with Saville was he had a kind of charm about him. There was something about him that was mesmeric. He was a special character. You don't get in that position unless you haven't got some kind of joie de vivre. He had something that doesn't really come across. It comes across as being bitter. Now, maybe that was the remit. We're going to do this because we just want to expose Saville as this absolute shit.
Yeah. I think you're dead right there.
It lacked something because of that, I thought.
Yeah.
And Coogan probably could have pulled that off. You know, he's a very good actor. Also, at times as well, sometimes when he was walking and stuff, and this is a big criticism, actually, in a way to say this, but sometimes he had that very Steve Coogan gait, almost like Alan Partridge gait when he was walking.
Well, I kept seeing Partridge at times.
Kept seeing Partridge because of the gait. And even because he was sort of playing down the Saville impression, he kind of sounded a bit more Mancunian to me than Yorkshire.
Yes.
Did you think the same? Isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
You thought the same.
Yeah. So
far be it to me to criticize, because I don't want to criticize.
I couldn't really make my mind up about whether he was doing a good performance or not, to be honest.
But what annoys me, because listen, you know, obviously I'm good mates with his brother and everything else like that, but I don't mind it, and I've said it before, I've criticised certain things he's done in front of his brother, and he'd be critical of him if he didn't think something was good himself, would mind. Mm. But I think Steve Coogan's amazing, right? You know that. You know that. You think that too. You think
he's
brilliant. And I thought when he played Stan Laurel, I thought that was a brilliant performance, like, as Stan Laurel, you know. And I thought Saxondale was brilliant. Obviously, Partridge is brilliant, blah, blah, blah. And there was aspects... There was times when he was doing Saville, I thought it was brilliant. But I thought he was, because of the subject matter, he was held back a bit. And I felt it was a bit of a shame, really. Because if it had been like, oh, now then, you see, ladies and gentlemen, oh, pop pickers out there, come on, now then, look at this world. He was like larger than life. He was captivating. I felt like you need to show more of that as to how he became
the star that he did.
Yeah. So what we got was, we got Mr. Hyde all the time and not Dr. Jekyll. Right.
You're spot on, Dave. I didn't even realise that until you said it, but you're so right, because it was almost like everybody was suspicious of him all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it was portrayed. Always dodgy, don't go near him. That wasn't the truth of the matter. People did actually love him.
Loved him.
They were fooled by him, but they loved him.
The reason he had such success and such power and in the thrall of people is exactly that. He was charming. He charmed the pants off people. He might have been eccentrically charming, but so was Rolf Harris in a different but similar way, because he was eccentrically charming. Stuart Hall, eccentrically charming. You know, they had something. They had a kind of almost like cultish power about them. And that's probably very hard to portray. You know, it is hard to do that. I just felt that it kind of lacked that, because the emphasis was, what a fucking bastard. And those scenes were so creepy, they were. But I think they would have been even creepier if they could have somehow shown him as this really great kind of great figure who suddenly then switches into this fucking human demon, which is probably what he was.
I suppose my biggest criticism of it would be that there wasn't any real plot to it, was there? Now, I know it's telling the story as it was as such, but it did feel generally quite flat to me.
Yes, I agree.
And It was very hard to watch at times. You know, I think me and Michelle, we struggled to get through the first episodes, and she didn't really want to watch it after that, and she didn't. You know, all the scenes were leading up to, like, a incident of abuse, weren't they? Correct. And you did start to get, you know, if a girl came onto the scene, you knew what was going to happen, and you started to feel a bit uncomfortable that you were watching it.
I just keep coming back to that thought that it somehow just doesn't deliver showing what a great communicator Savile was. No. And in the sense is, there was no better communicator. He had something about him. He had a sort of power. And the great thing is, if you watch the documentary that Netflix put out about Savile, which is a great documentary, because it shows all these clips of him being incredibly charming in his own weird way. Mm. Unfortunately for me, The Reckoning looked like it was trying to rewrite history a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. The reality was this. These people, like, and we'll put them all together, Stuart Hall, Rolf Harris, Jimmy Savile, they were incredibly charming, and that's why they became successful, okay? And you can't really tell their story unless you show that. It's all right just trying to show one side of it, where he's there with Ray Terrett and then...
Yeah, it was horrible. Almost like we can't show one element or incident of Savile, you know, maybe being nice. Now, whether it was a false nice,
yes,
it probably was.
Yeah, and in a way, I think that would have been more powerful.
Yeah.
It was too much of a caricature in the end, wasn't it?
He did really come across as extremely dark, and I wonder whether he was actually like that, because that sort of indicates that his mask slipped. This was the frustrating thing about Savile, and the biographer, Dan Davis, he gets incredibly frustrated that Savile is just, in his opinion, just acting. You know, he can't answer a question. He can't take a question seriously, and everything he says is an act. And yeah. Savile's like, oh, no, this is what I'm really like, you know. And but what I kept wondering is why Savile wanted to have, why he put up with the questions that he was being asked. Because in the drama, this Dan Davis character, he's not a character, real person, but he's really going at him about alleged abuse, isn't he?
Yeah. He
keeps bringing it up, which
yeah.
You think, well, Savile's not going to put up with that. Did he actually put up with that? Is that how it went down? He keeps pushing him on whether he's an actual child abuser.
Sure.
I mean, why did Savile, I don't really know the backstory as such. I've got the book, I've not read it all yet. But why did Savile want this book written, do you think? Is it because he needed a career boost, or it didn't look like he wanted to put the record straight? He was being evasive all the time. So I was wondering what Savile's motivation was for getting involved in it.
It's really difficult, isn't it? But there was an element with Savile that he was always trying to give a little bit of himself away, especially in retrospect when you see these interviews where he makes these jokes about young girls and everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was even in the like 1990s when he was still doing it in the 1990s, that was acceptable because things like that were acceptable in the 1990s. This is what people forget. The 1990s was just as misogynistic as the 1970s, mm-hmm. you know. It's only in the last, it's probably been only the last 20 years. The 1990s was one of the most misogynistic decades in British history. And dare I say it, Mr. Coogan knows that very well too, you know. So, mm-hmm. you know, everybody in the 1990s, it wasn't like it has been in the 2000s. And we've all changed. I mean, I saw, actually talking of Coogs, I saw an interview with him and he was talking sort of about that, how he's adapted and changed and, you know, and we all have. But the 1990s was a period where it was kind of very salacious and there was a lot. It was all this kind of ladette thing, but it was really all about showing girls in the get your tits out kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It was so fucking obvious.
Oh, the good old days, Dave.
Yeah. With all the magazines Loaded and Zoo and all that. And it was all like, it was members of S Club 7 every year getting in the top five, you know. I mean,
yeah, they were voted for her.
Well, barely out of the fucking hockey school uniform, and they're getting voted.
Oh, like. Yeah. Well, I've not seen that issue, but Yeah, I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? I suppose it was harmless fun. It was meant as, wasn't it?
It was. But you know, just as in the '70s, like Confessions of a Window Cleaner was.
You know, but is it things like OnlyFans and Instagram any better? Let's not pretend that the women who appeared in their magazines weren't up for it, and it didn't give their career a massive boost.
Yeah.
I'm not sure most lads between the age of 18 and 25. Are going to be listening to S Club 7. So, you know.
But you know what I mean? Is that what I'm saying is
yeah,
that
it was coarse, it was crude, it was all
crisp. It was crude, and teenage girls in their bikinis was an acceptable thing, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And when Savile was going on through the keyhole in the 1990s, he was making jokes about 16-year-old girls, and David Frost, Sir David Frost, was laughing out loud and thinking they were dead funny. So, It's all phony baloney, isn't it? It's all phony fucking baloney. The reality is that this guy was trying to tell the public a little bit more about himself. He was doing that. He was.
Why do you think he was doing that? Do you think it was because he knew he could still then get away with it even then?
I think in a way he was able to justify it to himself. I think he was making those jokes.
And they're getting people to laugh along with him.
Yeah, people laughing along with him to justify his actions.
Mm.
It's like when he was talking on the Louis Theroux thing about tying up the lads in the cellar. He knew in his heart of hearts what he was doing was bloody kidnap. It was a human rights violation, what he was doing with those lads in the nightclubs. But then he said, you do it, it was your daughter. I was looking after your... justifying these things to himself. He was doing that to the cameraman, do you remember? It's that old thing about him being a teetotaler as well, which is bullshit, because he was always having a tipple on his own, you know?
Right. I thought so the woman, Gemma Jones, is it, who played his mum, was really good.
Excellent.
And I didn't realise he had that relationship with his mum, but she was a bit nasty to him, wasn't that she? Was she was never impressed by his success, and she was dismissive. Great. Maybe she just realised he was a wrong one.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was, because of the mayor of Scarborough, there was a real hint of his predilection as well for young boys. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that comes out in the scene with the poor lad who was on Jim O'Fix.
Yeah, I don't think I knew about that.
Did you not? I knew about that because I'd seen him interviewed before. So I knew it. He was, it's a power trip. It was, you know, do you know what? As much as a sex thing, I think it was all a power trip for Savile. Mm-hmm. And I think that is portrayed quite well within the drama, you know, because they really hint at the necrophilia thing as well. They really went after it. They really did. It surprised me how far they went, the BBC, with it. Also, the fact that he used the C word in the first three episodes.
Mm.
I've never seen a BBC production that goes on at 9 o'clock in the evening on a Sunday night ever use the C word before.
Right.
And it was in three episodes on the trot. It wasn't in the last episode, on the fourth episode. It was strong stuff. It was heavy fucking stuff. Heavy, heavy stuff. Those scenes where Coogan's in the room with the young girls and with the young boy and everything. It's pretty heavy. And, you know, I have to say, fair play for Steve Coogan for doing it, because it wouldn't have been easy to do it.
Yeah, it's not like he needed a career boost.
No, it's not. It's not like he needs a career boost. And there were some scenes there that were really close to the bone. There's the young girl in the wheelchair and he's interviewing her on the tape and he basically puts her hand up.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That is horrific. And the very young girl, like the Asian girl that he locks in his apartment, and he obviously has, and he destroys her, basically. And she killed herself, didn't she, I think?
I don't know. I didn't know if that was true or not.
I didn't know, but apparently in David's book it is. I've seen an interview with him since. And he says that is definitely the case, that they were interviewed, a lot of the Radio 1 DJs and a lot of the DJs from Top of the Pops, in regard of that incident.
One interesting part of the book is that the writer, Dan Davis, he said he was a big fan of Savile when he was a kid, but he said all that changed when he went to see a recording of the show.
I was just going to mention this. Go on.
Yeah, sorry. And I think, if I remember correctly, there is something, they do show that sort of scene, don't they? I could be wrong there, but
they do.
He said when the cameras stopped and they stopped filming, he saw Savile
completely
change, you know, and it really shocked him.
Yeah.
And from that point on, he never wanted to watch it again, I think.
I heard Dan Davis say exactly that in this interview, and I thought to myself, why couldn't the drama have shown more of that?
Mm.
That would have been so effective if they'd have shown the charming, upbeat, positive, da-da-da-da, and then suddenly the switch into the Mr. Hyde that he really was, that he was away from the public eye, away. Because I thought we just had far too much of him being a... I'm sure it must have been part of the reason why they made it. Let's just present him as this shit.
It's not a great piece of work, really, in the end, is it? If you look at it, it's not something I particularly want to watch again.
No,
I wasn't disappointed it had finished.
I think it's a difficult one, and I think certain elements of it weren't... There were certain bits in it as well that weren't that brilliantly made, actually, as well.
No. It's almost like they started well, and I thought this... They probably didn't film it in sequence, but like you were saying, is there were some bits where Coogan was really good, and then he just suddenly seemed really lazy. You know, his accent dropped.
Yeah.
He didn't sound like Savile. Yeah. I don't know if it was rushed.
I think, do you know what I think? As soon as they started making it, got a lot of criticism that they were making it in the first place. I think they put the BBC sort of crapped themselves a bit over it.
Well, I heard it was made over a year ago. I don't know if that's true.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, because I'd seen pictures of it years ago that were, you know, keep this to yourself.
Because yeah, well, we did keep it to ourselves, Dave.
We did, sorry.
You did have the heads up on this. And we were very good in keeping it.
Indeed.
Sorry, listeners, but Dave has to preserve his friendship.
I knew he was going to be playing Jimmy Savile. It seems like it is years ago now. Years ago. And I'd seen pictures of him. So... The actual work, the piece of work was made, I think it must have been made about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think, I'm sure someone said 2021.
Yeah, it was a long while ago when, and so it'd been put on ice because they'd been worried about it, worried about the media reaction, the public's reaction. To be honest with you, it did get condemned pretty quickly, didn't it, as well? But Steve Coogan's performance didn't. Everyone was saying, but this is where I disagree, because I felt that the fawning over the performance and the fawning of this, how brilliant it was, I didn't think it was. I thought it was okay. I thought it was interesting in some respects, for sure.
Some scenes that just look weird. I mean, that bit where he's dressed as a jester.
Yeah, indeed.
You can imagine Savile dressed as a jester.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have looked that odd for some reason. But when Coogan is dressed as him, playing Savile, it just looked completely weird.
Exactly. You know? Weird.
And even when he was in the nightclub, you know, in the early clips when he's in the nightclub in the 60s, when he's got short hair, and I thought he got the chin right.
But he's too old for that. He's too old as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he did, because that's when I turned over, Dave. I didn't even realise it was on until Gav said, are you watching this Savile thing? And I just turned over to have a look. And that was the bit I came across. And it was just weird. It just was Partridge to me.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And I think the thing is, the difficult thing is, with this is why I wish they'd done a little bit more of the entertainer, Savile. With the voice, with the, now then, ladies and gentlemen, would you believe the one that only Jimmy Savile here to tell you about this, rah, rah, rah. And if they'd have had a bit more of that, and then the other side in the voices that Coogan was using, which was a toned-down version of the Savile eccentricity.
He was.
That would have been kind of good. But I think he was almost like shying away from it being an impression or a caricature. But the reality is, that's what Savile was. That's why so many people did an impression of him at the time, because he was so impressionable, because he was so kind of larger than life, and ultimately he was really charming. That's what he did. He did loads and loads of public information films, loads and loads of like adverts, loads and loads of television appearances. The man was so fucking in demand, it was untrue.
He did one on Stranger Danger as well, didn't he?
Stranger Danger, yeah. God. This is the thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether it was a fear from Coogan or the director.
I doubt it. I think it was the BBC and the director, and I think they
were... Oh, no, you came across as a bit too charming then, Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
You just we've do that scene again.
Yeah, we've got to focus on him being a complete bastard all the time and not look at that other aspect. And I think it would have been a much more rounded piece of work if it had done that. And it would, and those scenes when he was fucking horrible would have been even more effective. That's the thing to me. They would have been so effective if it had gone from... Kind of like Dan Davis says about how once the cameras ended, he was a shit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was really taken aback by that. So in a way, when they showed intercut clips of Savile himself, you go, whoa, there's Savile. Wow.
Yeah.
Look how kind of cool Savile is. You know what I mean? It kind of was like that.
He didn't show hardly any of his abuse at that home for delinquent girls. You know, that went on for years, that. For years. He just showed one scene. And
yeah, and the Broadmoor thing was all played down, hugely played down.
They didn't do the... They could have had the Bruno meeting Sutcliffe.
That would have been amazing.
Because it was flat, I thought. I thought, you know, if they'd thrown that in...
I think part of the problem is, as I say about it, when you saw the clips, you kind of went, wow. Now, maybe that was intended to sort of say, well, this is the real Savile. This is what he was like. This is how he presented himself. But that's a disservice to Steve Coogan. Coogan could have done that more rather than having these clips of Jimmy Savile coming on. Because in a way, those clips of Jimmy Savile, to me, outshone.
Yeah.
You definitely. Know, because he was a unique character. There's no point in pretending these people weren't incredibly unique and interesting characters. They were. That's why they were fucking successful and famous. They were national treasures, for fuck's sake. Yeah. And the thing is, you get like Harris and you get like Savile and even Glitter. They were big presences in people's lives on TV. And if you're from the Northwest, certainly Stuart Hall was.
Maybe that's what people need to look out for now.
Larger, it is,
you know, the larger than life character aspect.
But the thing is, the irony is, because it worries me a little bit because I kind of sometimes present myself in this big way and da da da, and I'm not like that all the time. And I'm thinking to myself, God, that's people will think because you can do that, you are ultimately some kind of pedo perv. And it's, it's not the case, is it?
No. But
the truth is, so many.
You're not a member of the paedophile, Dave.
No, absolutely not. But there's so many people who have been larger than life and on TV. There's loads that haven't done anything wrong at all. But you look at so many people who have been, even people who haven't been accused, particularly someone like Michael Barrymore, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone thinks, oh, God, he's a bit of a shady character now. And he was like, he could do no wrong. And he was huge, like larger than life character. But the thing with Savile,
what he's doing now, Barrymore.
God knows.
I think he's doing Panto.
Maybe.
He won't be doing Panto. He's already done Aladdin.
And I thought he'd... You had me then. Very good, sir. Very good. What is interesting, though, in particularly with Savile, well, almost completely with Savile, is that he was able to mix this idea of being a sort of jocular, eccentric, fun kind of person to the public with a kind of gravitas about him. Mm. He had a kind of ability to make himself also almost like saying, underneath this jocular exterior, I'm a very serious person. I'm very capable of doing big things like raising all this money for Stoke Mandeville Hospital and having the keys of Broadmoor.
He was actually in charge of Broadmoor, wasn't he?
He was in charge of Broadmoor, but that's
not Edwina Curry who did that.
Edwina Curry did it, but it was under the bloody auspices of Thatcher because Thatcher thought so much of him. Charles thought he was a fucking legend. Helped him in his life. He's the king now, that fucking sop.
Well, the woman who plays Thatcher, I thought, was really good.
Yeah, very good.
But, like, this is what it seemed to be in every scene. There'd be someone there, like, because she's with somebody in that scene, isn't she?
Yeah.
On Christmas Day, who you can immediately tell you're getting bad vibes from him.
Yeah.
He's suspicious of Savile.
Yeah.
Right? He knows he's a twat and he's not taken in by him, like Thatcher is. But But that seemed to be played out and repeated a lot, where
constantly
they'd have one guy that was sort of his mate and liked him, but there was always someone else who's gone, no, he's a wrong one. Like the guy who was running the hospital and his wife.
Correct.
It's like, well, we've got to have a counter character in here.
Yeah, and it's interestingly, when it came to the Thatcher thing, it was a fella. That was the only time, really, it was a fella. Because on the other instances, it was like, come on in, Jimmy, let's talk about your future. And then, you know, when he's in the BBC, and it was like, Bill. I mean, Bill Cotton got like an absolute kicking, didn't he? Bill Cotton Jr. over it all. And the other guy did. Oh, come on, Jimmy, blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as Jimmy leaves the room, she goes, I don't trust him. I don't like him. You
know? Yes.
Like this ongoing thing. And it did repeat itself a lot in that. And that looked to me very much like the BBC trying to defend itself, or characters within the BBC trying to defend itself from its actions.
That's right, yeah. It's almost like it was shown and then it was, or the script was produced and then it was rewritten with amendments. It was like, okay, yeah. Okay, you've got that bit, but can you put somebody else in this that sort of
I think
a bit suspicious of him?
The way, look at him. Look at, you know, I've never trusted him. It was...
Well, that's it. Even, you know, I've heard like Tony Blackburn saying, oh, yeah, we didn't like him. No one liked him, you know, when we worked on him. It's like, yeah, I bet you did.
So, and the thing is, and the other side of it is, well, you know, you say you didn't like him. You didn't do anything about it, did you? You didn't give a shit about it. But the reality is that might have been the truth. But what the drama did not do was emphasize enough of that change of personality, which must have happened, because in front of camera and when he was on air and when he was on, he was able to portray himself as this kind of charming court jester with no discernible talent, but a kind of gift of the gab, which in itself, actually, in fairness, is a discernible talent. This is the thing that people forget and say he didn't really have any talent. But he did have a talent. He had a tremendous gift of the gab, and he could read people very well. You know,
and he could do things off the cuff. You know, he didn't need scripts.
Correct. He was brilliant off the cuff. So those who were saying, oh, he didn't have any, I've heard that. He goes, he had no real talent. He was just talent. He's a fuck off. He had immense talent. You can't do that without immense talent. But everyone's trying to shy away from that. You know, this is what happens. It's like,
it's like a Disney version of Savile.
It's exactly. The problem is, if you just demonize people, you won't ever get to the root cause
of
these things. He was pure evil. Well, was he? Maybe he was just like totally fucking disturbed as well.
He's just detached from it.
And detached.
There was an interesting scene that he says something to Dan Davis along the lines of, I'm done with all that shit now.
Yeah.
And he says, what did you say? What shit are you talking about? And then he pretends he didn't say it. And that's like alluding to him maybe feeling guilty about all the abuse.
Yeah.
I suppose Dan Davis can't swear that he did say that, because he asks him to clarify what he just said or to repeat it. I mean, my impression was that he never felt guilty. You know, he got off on getting away with it.
Yeah, but quite possibly.
But maybe he did, I don't know. But I mean, maybe that was...
I mean, what's interesting...
Because he did make that point that, or Dan Davis did, that he uses the charity work to sort of free him from his guilt. I know people will say, oh, we use it as a cover.
Yeah.
But I think there was a hint that...
I agree.
Savile would do these awful things, and then he would feel so bad about him, and he had to do something to make up for it.
It's classic Catholicism, isn't it? Classic Catholicism. You give money to charity. You know, the gangsters break people's fingers and then they give money to charity. Or they'll confess to their priest once a year when they've shot someone dead. And or you'll say Hail Marys, you know. Savile even said, he said, well, he better let me, St. Peter better let me into heaven after all that I've done with charity work.
Mm-hmm.
But what if he doesn't? He says, well, I'll break his fingers and go in anyway. That's what he said. You know? So, I mean, things like that. And I think I think he was fucked up. Who knows what happened in his childhood? You know, this is the other thing. Things happened to him. Things happened. Mm. He's from a big family. There were six of them, weren't there? Which you never hear about.
He was very ill as a child, wasn't he?
Very ill.
Baby, I think. And I think at one point, he either died and came back to life, or very, very nearly died. Or they thought he was dying and there was no hope, and it was almost like a miracle resurrection.
That's right.
I think that might be part of what has made him feel invincible.
Yes.
I think it does hint at that in the book.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
But you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking that maybe it would have been better, as good as his performance was in bits, if someone else had played Saville, you know,
yeah.
Someone unknown. I mean, I often think
that. I agree.
You get a famous actor or actress who plays somebody and you can't quite imagine them as the person because you're seeing the actor or you're seeing a role they played before. And I think unknown actors are often better. They're more convincing.
I agree. And maybe someone who was not, I think, to be honest with you as well, like a comic actor, which is, I know that Steve Coogan's slightly tried to pull himself away from that, but he will always be thought of as a comic actor because of Partridge. And a lot of his roles have got that comedic, as I say, the perfect comic actor pathos role that Coogan has produced is when he's played Stan Laurel to me.
Yeah, I've not seen that actually.
Because it's a beautifully toned down performance, but it's still an impression, but it's an actor's impression and it's a lovely, they're both great in it. John C.
I didn't want to see it because from what I gathered, it was a sort of sad story about their friendship deteriorating or.
Yeah, well, it's quite lovely, really. I don't think
I love Lauren Hardy.
No, watch it. It's an homage to him. It's not, and it's not about their friendship deteriorating. It's about their trip to England.
Mm.
It's about them coming back together after feeling like they were finished. You know, it's not about them falling out or anything. It's about it's about love. It's about them loving each other, really.
Oh, well, that's good. Maybe I'm getting it mixed up with that BBC drama.
Yes, could be. But I think it's really charmingly. I think it's really worth watching. But you are right about the Saville thing, because I think that also, you know, Saville is someone who was known for impersonating. Coogan is known for someone who's impersonating Saville as a younger person. Did it for years on Spitting Image, didn't he? So it was difficult anyway. It was difficult ground for him. See, the thing is, when you've got someone like David Morrissey or Dominic West, played Fred West, didn't he? And then you've got Morrissey playing Oldfield in the Long Shadow. They are not baggaged with that idea of being, say, a comic actor or something or a certain role and blah, blah, blah.
No.
I think there was a real danger there because of the idea of caricaturing Saville, because he used to caricature Saville. That's what he used to do for years. Yeah. And in fair play, he really works hard not doing that. And there's elements of his performance which are brilliant. But what you could have done, you could have had an actor that played him as an older man and an actor that played him as a younger man. And I thought that would have been pretty good. Because part of the problem is, like you say, Lee, brilliantly say, you're looking at super famous Steve Coogan playing Jimmy Savile as a young man and then playing him as a middle-aged man and then playing him as an old man, right? And you're all the time thinking, that's Steve Coogan, and is his performance, is it that good? And is his Savile impression that good? And is it, you know, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a conundrum. I can understand why people said it was great, but it did piss me off a bit because I just thought, oh, people are just kissing ass there.
Mm.
The kissing Steve Coogan's ass, that is a great performance.
Yeah, the only other person I know who's played him is Alistair McGowan in a stage show. And like you say, if the comic actors, you're just remembering them doing the impression before.
Yeah, but I don't think it was his fault. I really don't. But, you know, he'll take the... But I tell you something, I'll be very surprised if he gets nominated for a BAFTA.
No, they want to sweep under the carpet, don't they?
They do.
Oh, shit, it didn't go down well.
I don't think it'll be shown again. I think it'll be off. And it'll be off. Goodbye.
The network have gone out of business, so they won't be... That's very sad, That's very sad. It is true. I've heard it's true, but...
They're very good. Very good.
Company. Yeah.
That's something... We should make sure we put this on the podcast. That it is really sad that Network have gone, if they've gone out of business, you know, because they put out some great stuff in the past.
Absolutely. And I've got loads of their stuff. Yeah. And the stuff I've got that I'd like to talk about at some point.
Yeah.
You know, certain dramas from the 80s.
brilliantly.
Have you any final thoughts, Dave, on each show? I think we're saying that the Yorkshire Ripper one was the better of the two, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that the Yorkshire Ripper one was probably 6.5, 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
And I'm probably being generous with the 7. And The Reckoning was probably about 5 out of 10, mainly due to the fact that it was kind of like, felt like a bit of a rushed production.
Mm-hmm. Let's get it out of the way before the paparazzi take too many pictures.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. The 5 out of 10 goes entirely to Steve Coogan. And this is, I mean this in a really positive way, in a really good way. It goes to Steve Coogan for a really valiant effort, because I think it could have been done a lot better.
Yeah, both could, I think, actually. But I think one scene that really stood out for me in The Long Shadow was the Jacqueline Hill murder.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
The last victim before he was caught. And her parents go to identify the body, and Jill Halfpenny's playing. And when they go back to the house, those scenes are played so well, because can you imagine how fucking...
They tore me up.
Yeah. And she goes into a room, puts on a record, and then just lies down on the bed.
I think Jill Halfpenny was brilliant in it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of time for Jill Halfpenny. I think she's great. I thought her performance was brilliant, and the husband's performance, the actor who played her husband, because it was really understated, but it was so emotional. I don't mind admitting I bloody welled up. I found it really
did hit home, didn't it? The effect it had. How horrific that would have been, you know, for them. You know, I don't know. It's just something about returning to that empty house where she's never going to walk through the door again. And how would you get through those days? You know, that's where it starts to feel a bit better.
That's where I think it was very good as a drama series, because even though you know the facts and even though you know what's going to happen, when Jill Halfpenny is on the phone to her daughter, on the phone to Jackie, and she's saying her to be careful and go in twos, and she said, no, it's fine, Mum, it's great. Your heart is already sinking because you know what's going to happen. And it's heartbreaking.
One interesting bit was that they changed the name of one of the victims, Yvonne Pearson, who I think was the 8th victim.
Okay.
She was changed to Donna D'Angelo.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't pick up on that.
Which is an odd name to change. I mean, all the names of the victims are very ordinary names.
Yeah.
But Donna D'Angelo doesn't sound very ordinary, does it? It sounds like a stage name.
That might be family wanting to be.
Yeah, I presume that was the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Tragic. I mean, they're both terribly tragic stories, without a shadow of a doubt. But I think ultimately you linger more on the tragedy for the families when you watch The Long Shadow than you do with The Reckoning, because The Reckoning is a character study. And I think maybe there lies the problem, is that you don't really perhaps think enough, even though the scenes in The Reckoning were very... very harrowing and effective of the abuse that Savile was creating. To be fair, I have to say, they were really saying, look, this is what he was, this is what he did. And it was like bloody hard to watch.
Yeah.
Upsetting. But you still really, when you watch Long Shadow, you really felt for the victims much more than you perhaps did in the Reckoning, because it was all about Savile, totally about Savile, not about the victims. Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Thanks, Dave.
Well, thank you, mate. That
listeners, let us know what you think of each one. Please get in touch and rate us if you like the podcast.
Appreciate
that. Stick a review out there.
Anyone who stumbles across an episode and they might like this particular kind of episode, let us know. And let us know the kind of things you want us to talk about. Because we're open to suggestion, aren't we, Lee?
Yeah, yeah.
We're open to ideas, and we love doing
this. We don't just cover sexual perverts.
No, or serial killers. We'll cover any range of things, and we enjoy it, and we love having our conversations because we're best mates, and we have been for years.
Yeah.
It's a joy to do it, and when we receive feedback, it means a lot to us. So please let us know.
Absolutely, it does. Share the podcast as well.
Yes,
that
please.
That would be appreciated.
Yeah.
You know,
spread the word. Yeah.
Tell about people. It because it's so difficult to get noticed in the absolute ocean of podcasts.
Yeah.
And we don't have any budget, obviously, or even the know-how to publicize this podcast effectively. Any help you can offer would be massively appreciated.
It's done out of love and friendship. This keeps
it always will be.
And it always will be, guys. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Thanks, listeners. We will see you back soon.
See you soon.
I'm not an act. What you see is what you get.
We'll be in touch.
He's our man.
He was one of the biggest manipulators of people to rise to the status that he did.
The investigation found no evidence to justify the allegations.
And do you consider that to be the end of the matter?
He groomed the whole nation.
There are rumours that there's another side to you.
What rumours might those be?
He gets away with it because no one else sees it. It's a violation.
As old as I am now, I would have danced on his grave.